Welcome to the Wisconsin LGBTQ Oral History Project. My name is Sam Fauble and I will be the interviewer. The day is June 6th, 2012, and we are in the Multicultural Student Center. The narrator today will be...
Sam Shea, last name is H-S-I-H.
And we will be conducting this interview until it ends. Okay, Sam, could you please start the first question? When were you born?
I was born February 15th, 1991. It was actually the Chinese New Year for that year, which is particularly relevant because I am of Chinese ancestry. I was born in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's really neat. Mm-hmm. How long did you stay in Honolulu?
I lived there until I was 7, about. 1998. And then we moved, me and my sister and my mom, and then the person who would become my stepdad, we all moved to La Crosse, Wisconsin. So.
Mm-hmm. Is that where you stayed for?
Yeah. That's where I lived between, the age of 7 till 18.
Okay. And do you remember a lot from your time in Hawaii? Or
was there enough? Like, enough of it, you know? Like, I was still pretty young. You know, I was just out of first grade when we moved. But I remember enough to, like, still feel at home when I'm there. I mean, not completely, but enough to have a lot of, very positive memories.
What sort of memories?
Let's see.
You'd be willing to share any?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think. That's when... So my parents split when I was really young. My biological parents, if you will. And so my biological father, who I call my bubba, which is a really bad way to pronounce the Chinese name for dad. So he lived there, and then so did like a lot of his side of the family. So a really positive thing about that is that I got to see them, more often than I do now, living so far away now. Of course, the typical, the weather, the beaches. It's just a really chill place to live. It's really beautiful. And also, Honolulu is also a city, so, you get sort of some city aspects of it too, which is great. So I didn't fully appreciate until I moved to like a smaller, town. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did it feel moving from Honolulu to La Crosse?
It was hard to say now because I've learned how to think about it differently now that I've, been through college and, been given a lot of tools to think about it, but I'm trying to remember when I moved. I was really sad because I didn't want to leave my friends. I didn't want to leave the place I had grown up. But I think I was also excited, just for like a new place. To see snow for the first time, or maybe not the first time because I had visited a couple times, but inescapably see snow where it's like, oh, we're not, leaving in a week, so I have to deal with this for a long time. I would say now when I think about it in terms of like race, gender, sexuality, which I didn't quite understand as much then, but when I moved, I was forced to see myself as a person of color. So I'm a mixed person. I'm white and Taiwanese or Chinese, however you want to say it. And in Honolulu, most people looked like me. Most people were mixed. There weren't very many white people. A lot of people were a mix of like Asian, like some sort of island ethnicity, or everyone was just mixed. A lot of people, I shouldn't say everyone, but And so, people looked like me. People had dark hair, dark eyes, tan skin, except for my mom, who's white. But Yeah, and there were a lot of Asians, but and then moving to La Crosse was different because it was majority white, and so I was kind of seen as this like exotic, you know, person from Hawaii. And like I remember bringing like seaweed and rice, like packing that for the first day of lunch or something, you know, people are like, "What is that?" I'm like, "Oh, seaweed, gross." You know, a lot of questions about like, "Oh, do you live in a, you know, a grass shack?" Or I'm like, "No, we lived in an apartment just like everyone else." So like at the time it was, you know, kind of funny. But then also I think it had a lot of things to do with like gender and sexuality because as someone who was assigned female at birth, and very much, you know, when I was 7 or 8, still, you know, I was a girl. And I don't know if I necessarily identified that way, but that's how I lived. I was very much exoticized in a very like heterosexual female way, where a lot of people were like, "Oh, but you're like, you know, what are you like, an exotic babe or something like that?" You know, where I'm just like, that's not something that I, you know, necessarily want to be or like. Be that stereotype where, you know, and later I think it really affected like my view of myself and my self-worth and like especially when, you know, I came out as queer and when I started to question like gender and, you know, I had been so wrapped up in these stereotypes. So it was hard to break out of those. 'Cause, you know, it's very fun and easy to play into that, you know, where you're like, "Oh, you're like Hawaiian like babe," you know, and it's like, well, I'm actually not Hawaiian. I was just born there, and you know, Hawaiians were pretty much like colonized and taken over. But yeah, so that was, I think, looking back, that was like a huge thing for me when I moved, that I didn't quite understand at the time, but with the experiences that I've had now, I see it that way now. So. Lots of
Lots of
stuff.
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it sort of like? I know you talked about this a little bit, but what was it sort of like in terms of for you personally, like coming from a community that was mainly, like you said, sort of looked like you, to a community that where you were one of the only Asians. What was it sort of like for you?
It was hard, but it was also, I think, in some ways exciting for me because I stood out differently. But I also want to recognize that there, also in La Crosse, there are a lot of Hmong people and a lot of people who have sort of, you know, been forced to migrate because of like war from, you know, Vietnam, like Laos, Thailand, sort of that area, because of the wars that US got involved with. And so, you know, I want to say that like it was hard because there was a really strong divide between like Asian people and white people in the community that I grew up, and you could see it in the schools. And being a mixed person, I didn't quite know where I fit in, even though, you know, still majority white. And I tended to usually hang out with mostly white people. And so, I mean, I also, English was my first language, so I had, you know, that sort of privilege. So I was able to fit in maybe a little bit more than other Asian folks who hadn't learned English the same way I had. I don't know. It was interesting, I think. It was an interesting experience, and that's not to like belittle any of the friendships that I had, you know, when I was younger. Yeah.
Okay. So how did your sort of identity as a whole from La Crosse to UW-Madison change? You
Oh,
made that sort of transition
man.
from high school to
Yeah.
college.
When I was 18, let's see. I was ready to be done with high school. I was like, "Oh, I'm so over this." I had spent some time in Germany the year before when I was a junior in high school, and I think that, like, taught me a lot about myself and how to, like, live with myself on my own, or, you know, whatever. And so by the time I, like, had spent another year in high school, I was like, I'm so done with this. And also I had come out as queer. I came out as bisexual or questioning in, like, you know, I really started to question senior year of high school, and then sort of March, I remember telling my mom, you know, March 15th, the Ides of March. And like after my my belated 18th birthday, and she was just like real chill about it, you know. And so when I moved to Madison, I saw it as like an opportunity to kind of start new and fresh, where not a lot of people knew who I was. I chopped all my hair off again, because I had chopped it off in high school, grew it out, and then that summer I chopped it off. An opportunity to like get involved with things that in high school I would have been too afraid of to get involved with, probably. Like, for example, GSA in Bradley. I think I was still trying really hard to make myself like cisgender men at the time, or like that summer. But by the time I hit college, I was like way into women. I just wanted to date women. And that's not to say that, you know. That was kind of, I think I was kind of looking forward to the fresh start.
Mm-hmm. Going back to, you mentioned to your friends, coming out to them. How did they, react to that?
Most of my friends were just like, cool, like, you know, or, you know, we talked about it. I think where the gap was the continued support part, right? So like, at first they were just like really excited, you know, enthusiastic, like, oh, cool, like, you know, you're whatever you are. And I think it was more people not understanding that I would be going through rough times afterwards. Like for a while, like at the beginning of that summer, I just like cut off contact with a lot of people. And a lot of my friends didn't quite understand why. And instead of, you know, maybe reaching out and like trying to support me in different ways, it was a lot of like, why are you not talking to me anymore? You know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Where it wasn't at all that I didn't want to talk to them. It was just like, I was really sad, you know? but they were like, I mean, for the most part, they were great. And like, my family, you know, it's always this like, you know, oh yeah, we definitely support you, that sort of thing. And then what I've found in my experiences is like, yes, they support you, but they don't know how to, and they don't know what it means that you're coming out as queer or whatever it is that you're coming out as. So like, for example, my mom, she's always been great, but at first she didn't quite understand that like structurally not being heterosexual was going to be harder for me to like live, you know. So she basically didn't get the idea of privilege, of straight privilege, of cisgender privilege. So that's been kind of a journey that we've, you know, been going through. And she definitely, like, we can definitely talk about it now, and she definitely understands and has seen what I've gone through and sort of gets it that way now. She does a lot of, I think she sees it too as like a woman, you know, sort of this, the idea of like sex, you know, male privilege or whatever. But I think coming out surface level, great, continued support, harder, you know.
How did your dad react to you coming out to him?
Do you mean my stepdad, or do you mean...
Sorry about that.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Your biological dad and then your stepdad, I guess.
Yeah. So I never actually told my biological dad. I just kind of let him figure it out on his own, which is kind of funny now that I look back. Because I was going to be like, you know, we barely talk as it is. So, like, if I'm going to be like, oh, hey, Buffa, like, how's it going? By the way, I'm a big, you know, queer, bi. Like, you know, it's going to be kind of hard. So I never told him. And then we became friends on Facebook later, and I was in a relationship with a woman, and at the time I was still identifying as a woman, and presenting as such, and so I think he figured it out, you know. he got the idea. But you know, I think that was sort of with sexuality. I think gender is a different story, but and then for my stepdad, I just kind of tell my mom and know that she'll tell him eventually. So it was just kind of like, oh, okay, whatever. that's kind of how it went. But
were there any sort of before you came out to your family and afterwards, were there any changes in the family dynamics, do you feel?
Yeah, I think so. I think I was raised very much to be, I mean, my mom instilled a lot of good things in me, like empathy, like the ability to empathize with people. You know, the ideas that like all humans should be treated fairly, you know, stuff like that, really important stuff. But I think that I grew up very much, like for one thing, like colorblind. So like pretending not to see race. Which is weird because I'm mixed, you know, and like, you know, pretending not to see things sort of thing, where it's like, oh, your intention is good because you're like, oh, I want to treat everyone fairly, but really it's kind of harmful because you're not recognizing the different types of struggles that people go through. So I think now, sort of through a lot of pushing and, you know, talking and, family conversations and struggle or whatever, I think my family is less likely to be colorblind, whatever, to recognize that people have different struggles and different things that are happening. Is that good? Okay. I think it's different now, and like I have two younger brothers and I have a younger sister. My younger sister is the product, if you will, of like my biological parents, and then my younger brothers are my mom and stepdad's sons. I think that and they're my younger brothers are young, they're 9 and 11, and so I think growing up with me, or seeing me, you know, having sort of a queer and trans older brother sibling who used to be their sister, I think has definitely impacted, you know, the way that they see the world. Same with my sister, and she's probably been my biggest ally this whole time.
Yeah. Now, originally I heard you, in a few questions back, I heard you talk about you being sad, like, at the summer between your college and high school career. Could you sort of, like, expand upon that? Like,
yeah. I'm trying to think, like, what exactly I was going through at the time, you know? Because you forget, because, I mean, you learn to sort of heal and learn how to cope with things. I think so my whole life, identity, or like what I had thought that I had, basically was pulled out from under me when I was like, oh, I don't think I'm straight, you know? And with that, like, I'm not this straight, exotic Asian mixed feminine woman either, you know.
And so I think I was struggling a lot with that, like having to think about, well, who exactly am I then, and how do I like move on from here, and how do I, you know, thinking about like partners and stuff, like there's still so much shame, you know, like even last year when I was in a relationship with a woman, like I would still feel so uncomfortable like walking down the street holding her hand, you know what I mean, where it's like, oh, no one should be made to feel that way. And like I try to like tell myself that I'm, you know, confident and like, you know, I do a lot of work in terms of like LGBT race stuff, and but it still gets to you, you know. And so I think then it was like me trying to think about how am I going to like move forward from here and like, you know, deal with the bullshit that is sometimes, that a lot of times happens to LGBT people, and have my family still back me, and like, oh, how am I going to tell the rest of my family, you know, there's a lot of shame involved with that. So I think a lot of it was a lot of shame and thinking about the future and thinking about how my identity was no longer what I thought it was. A lot to go through as like, you know, an 18-year-old or whatever. So.
Yeah. You said that your sister helped you through a lot of this. She was a big ally.
Yeah.
Could you sort of like expound upon that?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Then she was very supportive. Like, I think, I mean, I told her well before I told my mom that I was like, I think I'm, you know, gay or something. Like, what if I am? Because I remember like having this revelation one time, being like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? Because I was in this awful, okay, it wasn't awful, but I was in this relationship with this guy for like a good year. I didn't even want to touch him. Like, I was just like, get away. Even though he was my best friend, you know, and I was like, oh, this should be working out, you know? And so I had this like revelation. I was like, oh my gosh, what if I don't like boys like I thought I did? And I told my sister Farron one night, because we shared a room, that I was like, that I had like looked up stuff online and like, you know, sort of like what to, like comparing myself and like, what is it like coming out, like, you know, stuff like that. What are people going through? How are they feeling? And I'm like, I feel so much like this. And I remember telling her, like, I might be gay, and I'm trying to, like, I mean, her reaction was obviously very positive, you know, so that, I think that was, like, the first part, and then, I mean, I think we've always supported each other, too, just being so close in age, growing up as girls, and then, you know, having lived through a lot of the same stuff, and then, particularly now with like trans stuff, she's really supportive. And she was honestly like one of the first of my family members to like give a valiant effort to recognize my pronouns. And even, you know, from the start when I started going by gender neutral pronouns. And then she's really been pushing my family now to make, you know, continue to transition to use male pronouns. And just, you know, just sort of pushing back on them when they say, if they say things that are messed up, you know. So she's, and, you know, she, I did, like for example, I talked for this, like the Chadbourne Residential College thing, you know, where they had that, like, what matters to me and why speech series or whatever it was. I talked at that, and she was there. She, like, came. So, you know, things like that. She's been really supportive.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, could you, there was one word that you mentioned a while back, and I forgot to ask you this, but could you please define for the microphone cisgender?
Oh, yeah. So I use cisgender to specifically name privilege and power as far as like identity goes. So cisgender means non-trans, non-transgender, although it's complicated because you can have people who are gender non-conforming or whatever who don't identify as trans. But yeah, I use cisgender to kind of point out the power in a person having been assigned a specific sex or gender with which they still identify and present as. So yeah, cisgender, non-trans.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Now back to the preferred gender pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
What was that sort of like, that sort of process of people getting used to addressing you as he as opposed to other?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tricky, you know, it's always tricky. I think it was hard for people at first too, because I started going by they, them, theirs. And so people aren't used to using that to name one person. You know, and he, like, our training goes so deep, right? Like, the way that we recognize gender and, like, sex markers and, like, you know, it's just, like, automatic, right? Where you just want to give someone a pronoun. And so that's been really tricky. Especially, I started going by he, like, December or something, and I still very much, I mean, I was still very visibly, I could very visibly pass as like a woman. So I think it's tricky when people are fighting against their training to want to call me she, you know. And basically I've just told people, like, you know, you need to recognize my pronouns, because when you don't do that, you're basically telling me that, one, I'm not worthy of your respect, and, like, two, you're sort of reinforcing the violence that, like, the state, the medical, legal system does to my body by naming it a certain way and telling me that I'm wrong, you know, for thinking that my body is otherwise. So, I don't know, and also, like, now where I'm getting to a point where in public I can be read as male, it can be dangerous for me if someone calls me she, you know, in public, and it's just kind of like, you know, well, now you just outed me as trans, like, you know, thanks a lot, you know, I wasn't prepared for that. But I also understand that people who've known me for a while, you know, people who are still working against that training, you know, I'm not going to yell at them, you know? I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to expect that other people correct them by using my right pronouns, or I'm going to expect that if I tell them that I go by different pronouns, they're going to make a very good effort to respect that. And also, one pointer that I used for my mom when she was trying to get used to it is, like, because she basically told me, like, I'm still getting used to it, like, it's hard, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, just overuse my pronouns then. Like, if you're having trouble getting used to it, overuse my pronouns. So then you'll be sure to get used to it, you know? So, and I think that really worked. So I maybe I'll use that in the future. But I also wear buttons. It's annoying, though, to have to, like, wear buttons and, like, declare, you know? But,
mm-hmm. So you mentioned something that I've actually wondered about for a while. Like, what are some of the legal aspects of being trans? What's that like?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because for some reason the state is so concerned with regulating your body as, like, a sexed body or, like, gendered body. You know, like, it used to be when you're born, if you're born with ambiguous quotes, you know, genitalia, you know, they would try and correct it or something like that. Like, if you had an intersex condition or whatever, so that you could be properly gendered so that you can live a proper heterosexual life, which is makes no sense for me as a queer person anyway. But so I don't know, this in my experience the state has, I don't know, and I still don't understand what's such the big deal, you know what I mean? But the state for some reason is really invested in like regulating my body and like, you know, telling me what to do with it. Especially as someone who was assigned female, where it's like you already have enough, you're already giving, like, so much of your bodily autonomy is taken from you, like in terms of like reproductive rights, you know, all this stuff. And then on top of that, I'm like, well, I kind of want to be more of a dude, you know? So where it's like, legally, you're not going to give someone who looks female on paper testosterone. You're not going to do that, you know? So you have to go through these processes of like seeing a counselor. The counselor has to write a letter to a doctor. The doctor has to agree to prescribe testosterone for you after, you know, testing you, after sort of checking you out. And for me, that was an okay process because my counselor is trans. And my doctor at UHS actually has a trans son. So they were all super awesome and understanding, you know? And this is how, like, you know, the legal system intersects with, like, the medical system and everything. So, like, but legally, it's very hard to be recognized if you identify with a gender that's not on your documents, you know? And it's also, it's hard to get your name changed. It costs money. You have to go through the court system. I still haven't changed my name, and I'm still debating if I want to, but it's getting to a point where if I have to show identification, it's getting kind of dangerous, you know? Like for example, like, voting yesterday was, like, I gave them my last name, and they, like, couldn't find me because they're probably looking for a guy's name, you know? So I don't want that stuff to happen to me where I'm not allowed to vote, where I'm not, you know, allowed through security or, you know, something like that. Or, you know, God forbid, like, stopped by a police officer who's transphobic, you know? But, yeah, so the legal system has a lot to say about your body and what you want to do with it or what you can or cannot do with it. And in a lot of places, I don't think you... I'm not sure the laws, but I think in some states, I don't think you can legally change your sex still, but don't quote me on that. But that might be something, you know, if you're interested in looking. But I'm pretty sure in some states, sex changes are not recognized legally.
In Wisconsin, are they?
Yes. I mean, yeah. Because I have friends who've changed their documents here, so they've got to be. Otherwise, I don't know what's happening.
So how do you feel like the atmosphere of UW is towards the trans community, or the LGBTQ community in general?
I think you have really great pockets, because I've found really great communities here. But I also think you have really awful pockets too, right? Of people who are just terrible, you know? And then I think you get, like, a very apathetic few, too, but who are just like, I don't care. So, I don't, a lot of, like, in terms of safety, definitely don't know it, like, don't feel safe 100% of the time. Right now I feel safe, you know. But, for example, walking down State Street at midnight on a Friday or Saturday night, not safe at all, but also not safe for a lot of people, including feminine women, people of color, people who hold multiple of those identities. Yeah, it's tricky, and just like hearing some of the stories of my friends, having experienced some of them myself, Madison is not always a safe place for LGBTQ people. But on the other hand, I found some of the best communities here too, you know. Like I got involved with like queer people of color, where I found like huge, it was just a lot of support. And it's sort of like mutual respect for each other and, you know, understanding that like we need each other sort of to survive. Otherwise we'll, you know, our minds will like, and hearts will like deteriorate basically, you know. Also like my job, which, you know, like having gotten the chance to sort of help run the Gay Straight Alliance this year at Bradley and Phillips was really, really cool and rewarding, and like got to know a lot of cool people like you. You know, lots of other cool people, and just like being able to see like people's journeys and, you know, and like in terms of like the social justice activist community on this campus, the ones who are often considered radical, have been honestly some of the best people I've met. Particularly like Mecha, which is sort of like the Mexican Chicana student group, I guess, on campus, and like a lot of groups that organize around race, which have a lot of queer people in them, which is cool. It's all really great. And like also certain professors have really helped me too. I can think of just three even off the top of my head who have like become mentors for me. So without them, all of those people, like I wouldn't, you know, let's just say I have a lot to thank them for, you know. So let's say the community's pretty mixed.
Now, for the next few questions, I'm going to be talking about the community still, like here in Madison, UW campus, that sort of thing. First, let's talk about, you want to talk about the bad pockets, as you said, or the good pockets?
Let's talk about the bad first.
Okay.
And
look at it. So what sort of experiences have you had? I heard you said, you touched on that you've experienced some negative situations where you felt unsafe. What could you describe some of these situations?
Yeah. So you have to understand that like the way I look now has not, you know, always been the way that I look. So right now I'd generally be safe walking down the street because I look like just some dude, you know, where I can, especially at night. But particularly last summer, a year ago, I was living with my partner at the time in Madison, and I was very much like an androgynous looking female, and she's a very feminine white woman, and so we'd get, I mean, we learned our lessons, you know, the first couple weeks she was here. So for example, like the first sort of incident that I remember was we were walking down State Street, and it was like, I mean, it was like not even that late, right? It was probably like 10 or 11. I don't know exactly, but, and I don't even think it was like a Friday or Saturday night. It might've been, I don't remember, but there weren't that many people out. And it was summer, and we were kind of purposefully like avoiding the sidewalks, because so many drunk men were standing on them, or, you know, enough to like make us not want to walk through that. And there was like a corner where we sort of like, there was like a group, like a pack of them, pack of like white, like 20s maybe, men with their hats on and stuff. I'm just like, oh my god. And being, she's a walking target for straight white men who feel entitled to her as a feminine white woman. And so we were walking, and they happened to be crossing right as we were walking by them. Great, right? We're like, oh, we totally tried to avoid you. And one of them, well, he is probably like, I don't know, 6 feet or something, you know, muscular. He did this thing where he like crossed his arms across his chest and yelled like, body check or something like that, and basically like fell on top of her, but like not like violently, you know, but like forcefully. And she was like, what the fuck, you know? And being the one who they didn't see, because they just ignore you basically if you look queer, I yelled like fuck off really loudly, like super loud, right? And they were obviously like, you know, probably surprised, and like we, you know, we walked away, whatever, and we were both like fuming. And then they started yelling stuff at us, you know, just like, oh, we've got some lesbians here, and like we got called dykes, and I don't know, we continued walking because we're like, what are we gonna do against like a pack of men? And you know, this, you know, the yelling, one of them was really bad, like he yelled like lesbian for like a good block when he was walking the other way, like lesbians or whatever. And you know, I kind of flipped them off and continued to as I was walking, and we were both just like super mad, you know, by the time we got back. And it's like anger, it's like pure anger, you know, when something like that happens to you, like you feel like you could like turn over a car, you know, or something, or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you do. So we had to like talk about it and like sort of work through it together. And so, I mean, it helped that we came to the conclusion that like, you know, it was satisfying knowing that we kind of understood the structures around us, that like, you know, we took sort of like a view of that, and then we sort of were like, and we feel bad for these guys who don't understand, you know, how the world can work, and who are just sort of going along with it and not actually questioning anything. So that was sort of our way of coping with it. But yeah, that was one incident. And then there were a few others where it was like she got yelled, you know, like a guy, you know, would like yell like hey to her, and she would just ignore him because it's like, no, you're not entitled to me. And then, you know, you get the fuck you after that from them because you're ignoring them. Just like weird shit, you know? Like, you're like, what are you, like, who are these people and who do you think you are? But really, honestly, that's, aside from having to deal with like messed up comments in class or, you know, like really misinformed things, I haven't personally experienced more harassment than that. Oh, well, there was this time in Union South recently where this guy was like, I was walking past him and he said something like, if he were a tranny, I'd fucking kill him. And I reported him because I like, actually, it was really cool. That incident was really cool because I was with my partner who I don't think we were dating anymore, but we were together. And after this guy had said that in Union South, I turned around and he was with one other guy. I turned around, faced him, like his back, because he was walking away, and repeated like really like loudly enough so that he could hear. I was like, did I just hear you say, if he were a tranny, I'd kill him? And I just like stared at him. And he finally like turned around and I continued to stare at him. And he's like, well, I mean, I wasn't talking to you. And I continued to stare at him. And finally, it was just like so awkward for him that he like looked down and was like, sorry, and then like walked away. And then I reported him. But it's not like they're gonna catch him or anything. But I mean, they wouldn't be able to do anything anyway because he didn't actually physically hurt me or anything. But yeah, so just things like that, you know. And then there's been worse stuff that I've heard from my friends. I'm just like, I am so sorry that you've had to deal with that, and I'm glad that you were not seriously hurt. Where it's just like, a lot of times it has to do with gender. One of my friends who's like very, they're trans, they identify as trans. They get a lot of crap from people because they're so gender non-conforming that like some people who have never been exposed to gender non-conforming people are just like, are you a boy or a girl? Or literally, like they say that, you know, or they just had an incident where these three guys, like, or a group of guys, were basically about to beat them up, you know, but they were with a bunch of, like, their, like, femme lesbian friends who, like, basically, like, created, like, a shield around them, and, you know, the guys aren't gonna beat up, like, women. So, that's what community looks like. But, yeah, so just, you know, things like that where you're like, Madison still isn't safe for everyone.
Mm-hmm. But then you also talked about some of your mentors and how they've helped you. How, in what ways have they helped you?
Well, one of them, I wonder if I can, like, can I name names or...
If it won't get you into legal troubles or anything like that, if you're comfortable with it, then
okay.
if you have nice things to say about them, I'm pretty sure that's fine. So
okay. Yeah. Well, one professor in particular, a couple actually, but my first introduction to like queer theory was through this professor in Comm Arts who does like queer migration. Her name's Karma, and she taught a class on queer migration rhetoric, and that class like changed my life, you know. And so she kind of has been my mentor since I've had her in class. And another professor, Finn, who is in history, they're also my hero. They taught a transgender history course. They're actually offering it again this semester, but that class actually changed my life, like in really real ways, because before that I didn't think it was possible, you know, to be trans, or it was like the, oh, that could never be me sort of mentality, but that class just like completely opened up everything for me, and they're also... consider them one of my mentors. None of these people are officially my mentors, but like definitely to me they're my mentors. And then another professor who's in English, she's a queer woman of color, and I, you know, she's been very supportive too, and I've had some really great other experiences in classes where I'm just like, this is great. This is really good. And they taught me a lot in terms of being able to break out of, you know, sort of this push in LGBT with quotes, organizing that is very not critical of what your goals are, like all that stuff. So for example, like basically these professors helped me to start understanding how to organize in ways that benefited everyone, not just the people at the top within the groups. So for example, like LGBT movements, right? That includes T, right? But for some reason, our focus is marriage. How is that gonna help me as a trans person? It's not. I mean, maybe in some circumstances, but it also requires that, and you know, don't get me wrong, if people want to get married, whatever, but there's been so much money funneled into it, and literally money not going to other programs because white men want to get married so much. And so it's frustrating, right? But these professors have helped me sort of come up with my own way of understanding the world and doing activist work and education that would question those things, you know, as a trans person of color, as a queer person of color, as a cutie pock. So I think I'm really grateful for that. And it's not just them, right? It's like my communities too, QPOC community, lots of different, a lot of my like trans friends have helped with that, just being like, what is this bullshit? Like, you know, why are we organizing for this when we should be talking about this? You know, or at least like not giving all the money to this so that we can at least have this, you know?
Mm. Oh, I was just asking about your mentors and how.
Yeah. So they're great. Basically, they're great. Moral of the story, I guess.
Okay. So you touched upon sort of the next question that I had for you. How do you feel that the dynamics in the LGBT community? In relation to like specifically like the gay community and the trans community and like everything in between, I guess.
Like the relationship between them?
Yeah.
I think it's complicated because as a trans person, I feel left behind. You know what I mean? Like for example, the human rights campaign. Go off on them, like there's just so like it's so there's so many problems with it, for me at least as a trans person, where it's like you claim to be this like great organization that promotes the rights of LGBT people, and really it's more about LG, like non-trans people, because trans people can also be lesbians and gays, but. It's frustrating because there's, just because you're gay or even just because you're trans does not mean you're going to understand issues like race either, you know? So that's also tricky as a queer and trans person of color. But yeah, I think the relationship is really complicated, and there's been sort of this divide now where I see, like, there's actually a book written about this too, but you know, the gay community is sort of basing itself off of gender normativity, where it's like, no, we're not trans, like we're not like them, and the trans people are like, well, what the hell, like this was huge, like gender is so big, you know, and there's so many things that, like, there are so many points that you could regulate or oppress someone by regulating things to do with gender. I think, like, the history of it, a lot of it started as, you know, people who are today considered, like, cisgender gays or, like, transgender people of whatever sexual orientation that they are, you know, when these theories about homosexuality and, you know, whatever, like, what is it? They used to call it, like, psychological hermaphroditism or, you know, something like that, something ridiculous, right? Like, these theories that were being formulated, like, late 1800s, early 1900s, like, where these identities that we now recognize today, like gay, transgender, which is really new, they were so intertwined then, you know? They were so intertwined, and, like, there's definitely been, like, separations of it, and I'm not gonna, like, put judgment on whether that was good or bad, you know? But, it's tricky. The relationship is tricky. And I think that gay people particularly need to recognize their own gender privilege. people who are not trans, because so much of their identity as gay rests on their ability to be gender normative. So important. And I think for me, a lot of the problems that I see and a lot of the rupturing within communities has a lot to do with gender. Which is why when I, you know, try and help start things like Gay Straight Alliance, I try to always include stuff about gender and race. So that we're not just talking about, like, white gay men.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe the Human Rights Campaign?
They're an organization, I want to say they're based out of Washington, D.C., but they're, you know, maybe they're in New York, who knows? And honestly, I don't... My ex, who I was with last summer, is interning at Washington, D.C., and some of her roommates are interning at the Human Rights Campaign there, which is why I say it might be in D.C. And they didn't know shit about trans people, basically. And I'm like, well, this is how this happens. This is how this process happens, where the people that they're hiring don't know anything about trans people other than, you know, stuff that they've heard from probably unreliable sources. But it's an organization that I think, you know, I don't know their exact purpose, but it sounds like they try and lobby a lot for LGBT, with quotes, rights, like for them, like their agenda, like marriage, job discrimination, which for that they wrote out trans people, purposefully. I want to say hate crime legislation, but you know, I don't know these things. Family stuff, I think. I mean, I've seen publications that they've put out things like coming out guides or like how to be transgender or like, I don't know, whatever stuff. So they're basically like a huge nonprofit, I think. But then again, I could be totally wrong. Basically, it's a big player in LGBT organizing, like national organizing.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier about how your race sort of adds an, sort of another dimension to your whole identity. In what way do you feel that that intersection with identifying as trans as well as your racial identity, how do they sort of interact and do you feel?
That's a good question. Well, as a trans person, like, so gender, like modern understandings of gender in the US developed alongside and with, intertwined with modern understandings of race. And so it's tricky to separate those two. Like when you talk about gender norms, a lot of times you're talking about race too. Because when we think about gender norms and like how that plays out on bodies and like how they're considered normal or not, the way I see it, a lot of the norms are still based in a white understanding or like a Western European, maybe like US, you know, sort of how those things all came together, understanding of gender. So, and a lot of times through the lens of like, you know, sort of these ideas of gender, like as an Asian man, I could get read as feminine. Because a lot of times Asian men are feminized or considered feminine. But I also can look white sometimes. It's tricky because I'm mixed. But, and like I was talking about earlier, you know, that the race part really plays. played into how I understood myself as a woman before. This is something I need to think more about too, you know, in my own thought, you know, reflections and stuff. But a lot of gender norms, as far as like US-based gender norms, are sort of written against people of color. So like, a lot of times women of color, like their bodies would be sort of examined and taken apart, and particularly like African and black women, in order to show how non-civilized and masculine their bodies looked in some ways. Not necessarily masculine, but compared to the white female body. And so, I don't know, I'm kind of rambling now, but I think race has a big part, and as a trans person, how I'm gonna get read in terms of gender, how people are gonna perceive my gender, because I don't always look white. So I think gender norms get kind of thrown off in some ways.
Mm-hmm. And going back to sort of the community aspect, what has been your, could you describe your involvement or activism in the LGBTQ community?
Yeah. well, where do I... it's a hard question. I was part of like a gay straight alliance when I was a first year here in Bradley, which was great. Like one of the peer mentors at Bradley started it up, and you know, we came together every other week, I think, and met, watched movies, brought in speakers sometimes, went to events. And then the next, and I was also part of like some of the LGBT Campus Center programs, you know, like Queer Immersion Leaders Program, QELP, as they called it then. I think they changed the name now, but that, you know, basically tried to teach you like how to sort of help lead and, you know, things. Sorry, that's a really bad description.
No, that's fine.
you know, been, I worked as a peer mentor in Bradley that year, the next year as a sophomore, tried to continue the GSA too. It eventually kind of fell apart at the end, but I made some good connections along the way, which I think is important. There's been like there's an academic component to my LGBTQ experience. And so I write a lot, or I've taken a lot of classes. I'm getting a certificate in LGBT studies where we talk about issues that affect LGBT people. And so I've kind of got that academic side, you know, the theoretical, but you know, also the practical. And then this past year, as a junior/senior, whenever I was, I'm graduating. So I guess I'm a senior, or I was a senior, but my third year, I worked as a diversity coordinator for UW-Madison's like housing. And I worked in Bradley and Phillips and, you know, helped run the Gay Straight Alliance. I did, because this was happening while I was also transitioning, or I'm still transitioning, but so I kind of developed like workshops like about transness. And like one of the workshops I gave was at like the housing training, the winter training. I ran some workshops with like the Bradley and Phillips student staff. I did workshops like in the dorms, and I've run like, you know, with the help of like a lot of, you know, some like GSA members, facilitated like safe zone trainings, so that people in the dorms have an opportunity to come and start the journey of learning how to become an ally to LGBT folks. You know, beyond that, QPOC has been a part of my life. I wasn't able to go as much this year, but in terms of like having community though, like friends who are QPOC, like they make up, I think, the majority of my friends, I wanna say, or at least people who are really strong allies. So I don't know, my activism is kind of all over the place and I wish that I could do more. Gotta start somewhere, I guess.
Yeah. I had a question, but I lost it.
Oh.
So let me think for a second.
It's okay.
Oh yeah. Yes. If you're comfortable with this, would you mind sort of describing parts of like the transitioning process?
Yeah, or? Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's important because people are, you know, people have no idea. disclaimer, not all trans people want to transition the same way, you know. Not all trans people transition hormonally or surgically or anything. For me, I am hormonally transitioning right now. So what that means is, so I was assigned female at birth, and I kind of described earlier the process to get testosterone, but seeing a therapist for a while, having a therapist write a letter to a doctor, the doctor doing tests and prescribing you testosterone, and the process was good for me. People, I've heard bad experiences from people, but I started seeing a therapist this like last summer, and then September kind of decided that yes, I would like to hormonally transition. So I got the letter from my trans therapist and went to UHS and met my doctor, has a trans son, so she's really great, and. They ran blood tests on me to like check like cholesterol and like just a number of things, because going on testosterone can raise bad cholesterol, I think, or lower good cholesterol, something. Anyway, it affects, there's a reason why more men have, you know, problems with, what is it, cardiovascular problems or whatever. And then I started learning how to inject. So for me, I take testosterone with a needle and syringe once a week. And the nurses did it at first for me, because I was like, I can't like poke myself with a needle. But there are other ways to take it too. But that for me is like the easiest. And so I do it once a week. You know, testosterone, the amount that you take can vary from person to person. For me, I think I take like 75 milligrams or something like that per week. And I've been doing that since October 17th, 2011. And so it's been 7.5 months, maybe, what is that?
Wow, congratulations, that's awesome. Could you describe the other transitioning? I know you mentioned like, there are different types of transitioning.
Yeah, I mean, some people, you know, identify as trans and don't want to go on hormones, don't want to have surgery. Some people just want to have surgery. Some people just want to go on hormones. Some people want to go problems and have surgery, top and bottom. And there's, well, and I'm talking about FTM specifically. For me, surgery is a tricky thing because it's like, one, it's expensive and insurance doesn't cover it because it's supposedly not legit to them. But they can remove, like, you know, breast tissue or whatever, so, and reconstruct a chest that, you know, is considered female, to make it look aesthetically more male, with quotes, because it's hard to attribute body parts to genders and bodies and stuff, but, yeah, so, but yeah, as far as, like, testosterone goes, like, you know, your voice is probably gonna lower, not everyone's, but mine definitely did quite a bit. you know, facial hair, not everyone gets it, but I'm starting to get facial hair. It's very small, it's very little, it's fuzzy. But yeah, and like definite muscle growth. I've gained like 15 pounds since I started, and I want to say most of it is muscle. I've had a lot of like my period stopped because my ovaries have shut down. So like testosterone overload, shutting down. And so, you know, some people get hysterectomies too. Because they want to remove like uterus and ovaries. Yeah, so you know, your fat distribution changes to patterns that are more male. So for me, that meant like less on my hips, more on my belly. like my chest shrunk, started to build a lot more muscle. And like mood for me, like I had a lot of mood swings, which was interesting to deal with. And like I experience emotions a little bit differently now, which is really interesting. Where it's like I used to get angry, you know, and it was like I could definitely get angry, you know. And now when I get angry, it's different because it's like a very quick, like sharp anger. And I'll act more boldly, I think. And I don't want to attribute that necessarily to testosterone. I could see it as like a number of factors, combination of factors. Yeah. But like I'll say stuff more often now, and like confront people. And I mean, as far as like this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with hormones, but I'm more confident as a person. And I think that has more to do with the fact that I feel better in my body than anything else. And I've also gained, like, people treat me differently now, which is really interesting when you look at, like, sexism. Because before I was, like, very much readable as a woman, sort of a queer woman at that. And now if I'm being read as male, I mean, it's obvious, like, people treat you differently, which I hate, you know, because I'm like, wow, I knew sexism existed. Now I really know sexism exists, so, yeah. But so just a lot of things happen with that. It's a long process, and I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, ask, like, oh, how long or whatever. And, I mean, I think the pace varies from person to person, always. It takes, you know, several years. I'm still going to be changing a year from now, probably. But, like, oh, another thing, too, is, like, your junk down there changes a little too. So that's another aspect of it that's I kind of like. But and then some people, you know, a lot of people stay on testosterone. A lot of female to male transsexuals stay on testosterone their whole lives. Some people go on it for a while and come off of it, and get the changes that they want, go off of it. And of course, you know, your fat distribution is probably going to go back to the way that it was before. And like your hair growth won't be as strong probably, and probably get your period back too if you are FTM or whatever. But so just physical aspects of transitioning.
Okay. So the testosterone is sort of like a more permanent thing. If you wanted to sort of keep all the physical aspects you have?
Yeah. So you'd have to stay on testosterone if you wanted to keep your fat distribution and to be more male patterned. And like, you'll get your period back, probably. I don't know, not necessarily, but it could come back if you go off of it, right? If you haven't had like a hysterectomy or anything. But like, as far as voice changes go, I've heard that they're very permanent. So it's a good thing that I love my voice. I love that it's like way lower now. It's great. And like, you know, the hair follicles that develop if you start to grow facial hair, those will stay. But if you go off of testosterone, they might not grow in as fast, or be like less thick, or you know, whatever it is. But a lot of the changes are permanent. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Sorry for jumping around a little bit. I'm gonna sort of go back to the relationship sort of thing. So while, I guess, since you're still transitioning, and technically, you'll still be transitioning for as long as you want to, I guess. How have your friends and family sort of reacted to this? Has it been positive, negative?
I think generally it's been positive, but like my mom had a hard time at first. You know, I think a lot of it came out of concern for me because it is a big step. And I kind of had to tell her, like, there's too many people telling me not to do it. Society, or the way that I was raised, has told me that it's wrong to do it, so I don't need to hear it from you, too. She took that pretty well, considering that I was very upfront about that. My ex has always been supportive, and I was worried about that because she, you know, a lot of times you hear about people who identify very strongly as lesbians and their partners want to transition to be, you know, to look like men. And I use these terms very loosely, like men and stuff. But, you know, that concern is always, for me, was at the back of my mind. Like, am I still going to be loved? Also, like, you know, it's hard for people to understand because there aren't very many of us. You know, there aren't very many trans people in general, whether or not they decide to hormonally or surgically or anyway transition. It's a hard issue as it is. And then to have it be so visible on my body where you're like, you can't just ignore it, you know. But I think the reception has been generally very good, which is great. You know, definitely like some getting used to, some pushback from my family who are having a hard time with the pronouns, understandably, of course, but that shouldn't make them less, shouldn't make them give less of an effort, you know. So, and like, I'm just trying to think, like, I am worried, though, like, this has been sort of at the back of my mind, where I'm hitting a point where on the street I could at many times pass as male, where it's like, is my community going to recognize me anymore? You know? Whereas before I was a very androgynous female, or that's how people read me, where it's like, oh, that's like a very clear, visible queer marker, you know? Whereas like now, I'm worried that like if I ever go to like a lesbian bar, people are gonna be like, what the fuck are you doing here? You know what I mean? Where it's like, no, these are the communities that I came from. So that's something that's always on the back of my mind. But as far as my communities go, like, so supportive. And, like, QPOC, queer white friends, like, lots of friends, really supportive, which is great. So I really appreciate that.
It's great. Yeah. So have there been any people that you've seen who you knew before you transitioned, or but then you ran into them afterwards or during, I guess?
Yeah, it's happening a lot now. It's so funny. It makes me laugh. Like, so great. Yeah, awesome. A lot of times people just won't even recognize you, because when they're perceiving your gender differently than the way that they knew you, they're just gonna not recognize you, you know, until you like go up to them or whatever. But yeah, there's been like this one time I was like trying to go to the bathroom in the men's restroom, and I saw someone from high school, and I was like, oh shit. And like I like looked away, and like I don't want to have this conversation right now. Like, so things like that, where it's just funny, you know. And I know he would have been fine, you know. It wouldn't have been a big deal or anything, but it's just hilarious. And like, I still, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, people, like, my voice is lower, but I still sound the same. You know what I mean? Like, it's like my speech patterns are still the same. Like, you can still hear my voice. It's just an octave lower. So I think, like as far as, like, calling relatives and stuff, like, it doesn't faze them as much, because, like, even if they haven't heard me for a long time and, like, my voice has changed, I still sound like me, and, like, you're on the telephone, so they, like, have no clue. You know, because the telephone sort of distorts sound sometimes, but... I think generally people are too trying to be too socially courteous to really like, so they like kind of cut back their reaction, you know, but it's great. Yeah.
Well, I just have a few more questions for you. So have you sort of noticed sort of trend in the, and you can answer this either from the perspective of the LGBTQ community as a whole, or like a specific subgroup of that, but have you seen, what sort of changes have you seen in the community?
Like over...
Over like a period of time, sort of.
Okay. Well, I will say that I'm not very old. I'm 21, so it's really only been like a few years since I've, you know, become more of an active member of the community. But I can say that from what I've heard from like mentors or like older queers, things have changed, but they haven't changed. You know, it's just different kinds of struggles, and. For me, I like to be a part of communities and be actively part of communities that are trying to transform themselves. So as far as like my immediate communities, I feel like things have changed for the better. the people that I know, they're very dynamic people, and they're also doing a lot of that work, so it's positive, you know. It's just hard when the mainstream of your community, with quotes, wants things that don't directly benefit you or that don't seek to represent you in any way. So, like, for example, like marriage, right? Where it's like, well, what if I were a poor, you know, trans person of color without insurance, without health insurance, without access to housing, whatever, how is getting married gonna help me, you know? It's not, unless I marry like a really rich person, which also probably wouldn't happen. So I also have hope, right? I've seen like people trying to raise awareness too, right? Like, for example, and like building coalitions and joining things together where you wouldn't think that they were meant to go together. So like LGBT and migration. Like, immigration is an LGBTQ issue. People tend to forget that. And LGBT people tend to be xenophobic sometimes, where it's like anti-immigrant, which doesn't make sense. So I do have like hope. But then I also recognize like a lot of the limitations of the current ways of organizing, where it's like this constant push for hate crime legislation. When for me, that means imprisoning more people and letting the prison industrial complex thrive, continue to thrive, where people are profiting off of having people in prison, which is a real thing. And it's kind of scary. And so for me, the dynamic people around me will be pushing more for changes in educational policy, where people are being taught of the diversity of life from the start, so that hate crimes happen less, you know, down the road. As far as like trans issues on this campus, I think some parts of them have improved. Like 3 years ago, it would have been so hard for me to go to UHS for trans issues, but I can now, right? So like that, I have to my trans siblings to thank, you know, which is great. So I think transformations like that have been happening along the way, which is really, really great. But I think generally, as far as like 3 years ago, things have changed, but they haven't, you know. So
where do you think, based on your observations or your beliefs, where do you think that the LGBTQ community will be in the next few years? In what ways do you think it'll change? This is sort of a hard question, I know.
It is hard. Well, I think on a national level, I see it continuing in the direction that it's going, which is marriage, marriage, marriage. That's it. No. What about LGBT homeless youth? But I think I also see an emergence of trans visibility, which is good, I think, in a lot of ways. Although messed up things are still happening, like the CC McDonald Minneapolis case. But, and then as far as like if I'm around Madison, I think you can count on me being an active member of the LGBT community, trying to push it in certain directions that benefit not just those who are already comfortable. So I am hopeful for, and you know, I'm not trying to look like a hero or anything, you know. And I also, like, the people I see around me do doing a lot of really great work. So as far as like Madison community goes, I'm really hopeful. And I see it going in positive directions. I think as long as we can continue to self-reflect and be critical of our own work.
Could you describe the McDonald CC case?
Yeah. So CC McDonald is a African American or black trans woman who was a student in Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities, and on the north side, I think, of Minneapolis, she was, with some of her friends, she was attacked by a group of men, you know, yelling racist and transphobic slurs at them. And one of them came at her, and she pulled out the only thing that she really had to defend herself, which was a pair of scissors. And the guy eventually died. And what happened was Cece was the only one charged with anything. And she was convicted of something about manslaughter, I think. And she will be serving 2 years in prison, which is really hard as a trans person, where prisons are segregated by sex. And she's also a person of color, right? And we know that like the majority of people locked up are people of color. And so she has been sent to a men's, I think, prison facility. So it's just, it baffles me that someone who's acting out of self-defense gets sent to prison, when really the men who attacked Cece and her friends should be the ones getting community punishment of some sort. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. So stuff like that, where you're just reminded of how like racist and transphobic and misogynistic this criminal justice system is, where she can be locked up for defending herself. As an African American trans woman trying to like go to school. So, yeah.
Okay, last question. Do you have any other things you want to cover or anything?
No.
Okay, then.
I think, you know, just. Did you have another question?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you have any last words you'd like to say.
Last words? Sam! I don't know. I think community is key. I think those would be. We need our queer family, you know? And we need some form of community accountability to each other that maybe doesn't involve locking people up. So. And we need coalitions, and we need to take a multi-faceted and multi-layered approach to our work that involves lots of aspects to people's lives.
Okay. Well, this has been the Wisconsin LGBTQ Oral History Project, with the interview being by Sam Fauble, the narrator being Sam Shea, and the date is June 6th, 2012, and thank you very much for listening.